So one of the objectives of the ramp was to measure soybean aphid IPM adoption and implementation and to track changes over time. And one of the ways that we started this in the first year of the ramp was this one-page survey that Kent put together, and then it was looked at by the entomologists in the various states and corrected. And it was meant to be given to farmers at extension meetings. So this is not a non-random survey. These are actually folks that are coming to meetings. They're interested enough to come to meetings. They're getting some additional educational benefits. And it was this was given in 2004 through 2006. So we're looking back at those crop years and giving the survey in the winter after those crop years. And again, this was voluntary. When you went to a meeting, at least the way that I did it, is this was given as the folks were sitting down. They filled out the survey. If there were several people from the same farm, they just filled out one survey, and they weren't forced to fill it out. The surveys, most of the surveys, the majority of them came from Michigan and Minnesota, and we surveyed all 3 years at extension meetings. We also have surveys from Iowa for 2 years and then from Wisconsin in 2006. So the number of responses, you can see the number for each year of the survey. Some of these folks are not planting soybeans, and they're planting corn, or they're coming to meetings for other purposes. 2006 was a big survey because that was after the 2005 season. This is the average number of soybean acres per farm, the mean and the median. This is for all states put together. So I know for Michigan, we would probably have smaller field sizes and less acres per farm than they would, say, in Minnesota and Iowa. But these are for all states that are kind of put together. So you can see the mean is just a little bit over 500 acres per farm. This is the percentage of people that said that they treated for soybean aphid in that crop year. And then the next set of bars is the percentage of those acres that are treated. So that's if someone says, yes, I did treat in this crop year, and then you have the percentage of those acres treated on that particular farm, and then the percentage who had treated prior to that crop year. Where's my pointer? So as far as the percentage treating, clearly the 2005 field season, I think you've heard this from a couple different speakers, was an aphid outbreak across all of these states. And so 84% treated for soybean aphid, at least the people that were at this meetings in that crop year. And of the people that treated in that year, 87% of their acres were treated. So there are people that are, and in fact in most cases, they're not treating 100% of their acres. There are some fields even on a given farm that are not treated. And then in the following crop year, in 2006 crop year, of course many of those people had treated in 2005. So you can see for those that had treated before, the orange bar is very high because they had treated in 2005. And back in the 2004 crop year, only 13% said that they had treated in that year, and that was a much lower aphid year. The estimates of acres treated, this is one of the slides that I actually threw in, because it kind of shows that when you try to get data on acres treated, it can vary tremendously from survey to survey or person to person. So this first estimate at the top, right after the 2005 field season, I emailed my colleagues in other states and said, can you estimate for me what percent of your acres were treated? And the way I did the Michigan estimate is I called my extension agents, and they gave me an estimate, and I multiplied by the number of acres in their county. And of course, 2005 was a big year, so I think the number, the 85%, shows my great enthusiasm for that year, and my enthusiasm at the number of potential acres treated. And at least for Michigan and Minnesota, I believe this was Dave Ragsdale's estimate, it was 85% of the acres treated. And again, we were essentially overestimating that. From the RAMP grower survey, if you look at the state data, not at the bulk data, 91% of the people that I surveyed said that they treated in 2005, and 67% of the Minnesota folks. And again, these are people coming to meetings, they're interested in aphids, they were interested enough to fill out the survey, So maybe it overestimates some of these sprayed acres. And on the bottom is the NAS survey estimate, and it's 42% and 30%. So clearly, entomologists are sometimes enthusiastic about spraying, and we get excited and want to overestimate maybe. As far as the application method, ground is still the method of choice. There is aerial application when you break out the state data. Minnesota seems to have more aerial application. In some place like Michigan, we don't have the planes in order to do that. So there are some state differences, but by far it's still mostly a ground application. The insecticides applied, again, this is my slide, it's not Kent's. If you look across all states and in all seasons, Asana, Mustang, Loris Ban, and Warrior are always the top four choices. So three of these are pyrethroids, and Loris Ban is an OP. I could not get state data for differences in insecticide. It isn't in Kent's report, but I would suspect that in Michigan, again, there's a great enthusiasm for Loris Ban, and you see a lot of it used, and maybe a bit less of it as you move to the west. Between 19% and 22%, depending on the year, say that they tank mix with glyphosate. That is quite common, and growers are now pretty much used to doing that. There wasn't any data on fungicides, but there is a certain number of folks that are tank mixing with a foliar fertilizer, and in some years it was quite high, and in some places up to 21%. So you're getting these tank mixes and this kind of culture of tank mixing sort of building up. This is the percentage of growers who knew or said yes that they knew that soybean aphids could repopulate after treatment. We've heard this morning sometimes you have maybe a cruiser treatment, and can you get aphids later in the season? Or if you sprayed early, can aphids come back? And in the high 80s up to 91% in 2005. Remember, 2005 was a big aphid year. So a lot of people had a challenge where they sprayed and then product didn't perform as suggested by the person that recommended that product, or the spray application maybe didn't get good coverage. There's some of that going on, and people did spray multiple times. So they were aware that there could be aphids coming back after treatment. This question asked growers, how do aphids cause damage to soybeans? And sucking sap, I was like, oh good, 77% know that they suck sap. But then we have this, you know, continuous group, 5% to 10% that are thinking about that aphids actually chew. Now that's was going down slowly. I think that mostly in Iowa they thought that. And in Michigan, far more people. No, I actually don't remember. But Kent, if you're listening, I'm not sorry, data. So there, and these are people that are coming to extension meetings. So this a little bit kind of disheartened me a little bit, because you know, for 3 years after they take this survey, the next talk that they hear is mine, where I'm showing aphids, and so I guess I'm an ineffective educator. So I don't know, but there is this kind of consistent group of folks that still don't understand a little bit about aphid biology. Now this is a little bit more heartening. How often should aphids be treated for profitable control? And most people answered it depends, and it could depend on aphid counts and weather conditions and plant stage. Now some folks, between 15% and 20% perhaps, sort of recognize that in most places July and August is sort of would be our spray interval. It's not May, it's not September. So once in July or August, and then once in July and once in August, so a two-spray system, only a few folks thought that was how aphids should be treated for profitable control. So the first line is more maybe of an IPM kind of thing, in that they know that it depends on a number of factors, and then the middle set of bars is a one-spray, and the last set of bars would be like a two-spray system. When does most aphid damage occur? They had variety of choices. Any stage, R1 to R3 would be flowering and early pod development. The R4 to R6 would be a later kind of spray timing. The VE to V4 would be quite early. And most growers either said any stage or chose that flowering period or early pod fill where there is data to show that that's when aphids are actually appearing and beginning to increase, and you often get some of the best yield benefits. Now, some of this VE to V4, you may be wondering, these are plants that are just sort of coming out of the ground or are a few weeks from coming out of the ground, and wonder why do people actually say this. There are some locations, especially in Michigan, where we've had these early pockets of aphid infestations very early because we had a lot of buckthorn. So we're talking plants that are literally at a V1 stage or V2 stage that have 300 to 400 aphids on them, and every plant in the field is like that. So you have some historical memory from some of these growers. Now this is a lot more encouraging. This is essentially getting to the threshold question. What is the lowest density, and this would be numbers per plant, for profitable spraying? We already mentioned that the action threshold and now the economic threshold is set at 250 aphids per plant, and 66 to about 73% of the growers pick that as they recognize that threshold. A few even say it's 1,000, and very, very few use this threshold of 3 per plant, a very, very low number. So that was probably Iowa again. That one response. And then you have this other group that say it depends, and it depends on a variety of factors, but they clearly recognize that 250 threshold, and at least my impression in Michigan is that a lot of people do use it. They struggle to count aphids per plant, but they do their best, and they're not spraying when there's just a couple aphids.
Can't count that high in Michigan?
That might be it. That could be it. The comment was that they can't count that high. Then Kent also asked what kinds of information were they using to make their spray decisions, and he had very important, somewhat important, even less important, not important, and he bulked the very and somewhat importance here. So scouting reports and plant growth stage were the two most important things that they were using to make their spray decisions. And that's good because it's not their neighbor treating, which is further down there. They do use that. So the plant growth stage is important for our thresholds. We go out to about R4 or so with that 250 threshold, and they recognize that they don't want to go too late and too early. And the scouting reports, there are a lot of mechanisms now to get scouting data. There's the pipe map, and there's extension folks, and there's lots of ways that we are getting information out. And they're also using regional reports, which I presume might mean a local crop consultant or maybe an extension agent, their neighbor, and the availability of custom application. Now, the availability of custom application, I think it may be more of an issue in Iowa, and no, Matt's saying no, Iowa and Minnesota, where you have a lot more acres. But as time has gone on, it seems like more growers have purchased their own equipment. So that availability of custom application, maybe that concern will go down. And this is the percentage of people who say they adopted IPM recommendations from the university that they were, getting the extension meeting from. And they were only asked this in the last 2 years of the survey. So 50% said most of them, 13% said all of them. I had to pay a lot of money to those folks to get them to say that. 11 did not answer, 11% in both years. And I wonder if that's because they're at the meeting where I'm standing there and they kind of feel like they don't want to answer because I might read it or something. And a few say somewhat. So if you add the 50 and the 13, you're at about 60% say that they're adopting most or all of the university recommendations. And that included the threshold and when to scout and how to scout. So for 2008, again, this was a quick survey in 2004 through 2006 or 2007. That was not random and was done at extension meetings. So there is a long survey, which is many more pages. It's already being printed. The subjects are being randomly drawn from the state commodity group lists. So the checkoff list for growers that are part of their soybean industry. So the states, at least Minnesota, Iowa, and Michigan, and I believe Wisconsin, they are drawing growers' names, and those commodity groups are supporting that. And then that long survey will be mailed and then analyzed and reported. So that will be a it'll be a random survey. I guess it's still voluntary, but I know they're giving little biofuel cards or something that they can use to try to get more response. Now, this full report is available. Kent has published this as a staff paper. It's on the University of Minnesota Department of Applied Economics website. And if you go to that paper, there's summaries for the different questions. And then if you want to look at your individual state, it's by appendix. So you can get Michigan, Minnesota, and see how poorly Iowa did. I don't know. So and it's online. And it's about, I don't know, if you're going to print it off, maybe 30, 35 pages total. So we'll try to answer any questions that you have based on this survey. And Kent apologizes. He couldn't come, so that's it.